From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, we meet the actor who our film critic John Power says gave the best performance of 1999, Om Puri. He's a movie star in India who's starting to get better known in the West through two British films, My Son the Fanatic, which is now out on video, and the new film East is East. We'll talk about making movies in Bollywood, as they call India's version of Hollywood. They churn them out pretty quickly. Om Puri has made about 130 films, art films and commercial ones. Om Puri, coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Paul Brown. The attorney for relatives of Cuban refugee Elian Gonzalez expressed anger today that government would not change its goal of returning the child to his father, Juan Miguel Gonzalez, quickly. Jose Garcia Pedroza spoke to reporters this afternoon when talks with the government had broken down.
The government has made the decision, and they have told us this, that they will revoke or transfer parole, and that they will change the custody to the father, even though the government has never even spoken to the boy, met with the boy, or most importantly, have the boy evaluated by psychologists or psychiatrists.
Elian's Miami relatives have fought all attempts to have the child returned to Cuba. On arriving in Washington today, Elian's father said he is impatient to regain custody of his son. The Justice Department has decided not to prosecute a Pentagon spokesman for releasing information about Linda Tripp, the former friend of Monica Lewinsky. NPR's Barbara Bradley reports.
Tripp became a household name after she taped telephone conversations with Monica Lewinsky about Lewinsky's relationship with the president. Reporters began digging into her past, and it turned out that Tripp had lied on a security clearance that she had to fill out for her job at the Pentagon. She had said she had never been arrested when, in fact, she had been briefly detained when she was a teenager. Pentagon spokesman Ken Bacon leaked the information to a reporter in possible violation of the Privacy Act. The act prohibits the government from releasing harmful information about a private citizen without his or her permission. Today, the Justice Department decided the mistake did not warrant prosecution. As for Tripp, she's being prosecuted in Maryland for violating state law by making the tapes without telling Lewinsky. Barbara Bradley, NPR News, Washington.
The latest mission aboard the Russian space station Mir is going as planned. Owen Fay reports.
The lights are on again aboard Mir, after two cosmonauts clambered from a Soyuz spacecraft into the Russian space station this morning, becoming the first people to fly inside Mir in 8 months. Since August, the 14-year-old station has been quietly orbiting Earth while the Russian Space Agency debated what to do with it. After several major accidents on board over recent years, the decision was finally taken to retire the craft and let it burn up in the Earth's atmosphere. But Mir got a new lease on life when an Amsterdam-based firm negotiated for the commercial rights to the station, offering Russia's space agency much-needed cash. The purpose of this mission, then, is to carry out minor repairs and spruce up Mir to get it ready for its new role.
Owen Fay reporting. Stocks moved up today on good sales news from some major retailers. The Dow Industrials were up 80.35 points. This is NPR News. Summer gas prices are not expected to be as high as formerly predicted. The Energy Department says today we have probably already seen the highest prices this year and that pump prices should gradually decrease. NPR's Sarah Mobley reports.
Compared to last month's report by the Energy Information Administration, today's announcement is more optimistic. Motorists will see a slow decline in pump prices from now until at least the fall. Dave Costello, an economist with the EIA, says this June, oil production is expected to increase by as much as 1.7 million barrels a day.
Right now, we think we'll probably see an average for the summer of $1.46, perhaps a little lower if things continue to improve, but it should be a relatively gradual decline.
Costello says this summer, U.S. drivers are expected to use a little over 8.7 million barrels of gas a day. Last year, motorists used not quite 8.6 million barrels a day. Each barrel holds 42 gallons of gas. Sarah Mobley, NPR News, Washington.
Organizers of the Million Mom March say they're hoping for 100,000 mothers in Washington to rally for gun control on Mother's Day. The Washington event will be part of a nationwide demonstration involving 20 cities and up to a million women. On Wall Street today, the Dow Industrials were up 80.35 points or 0.73% at 11,114.27. An advance in mapping of genes by Celera Genomics helped the move forward, also a good earnings report from Alcoa. The Nasdaq was up 98.34 points or 2.36% at 4267.56. I'm Paul Brown, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Archer Daniels Midland Company, bringing NovaSoy brand isoflavones to consumers throughout the United States, on the web at admworld.com.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by this and other NPR member stations, and by Barnes & Noble, bookseller since 1873, online at barnesandnoble.com, AOL keyword BN. Time. This week, Time magazine explores questions about science and space in this century with its third installment of Visions 21. Time.com and Garden.com, an online source for gardening advice and home delivery of a variety of seeds, plants, home furnishings, tools, and other gardening products. And Random House's Delta Trade Paperback Division, publisher of How to Think Like Leonardo da Vinci, Seven Steps to Everyday Genius by Michael J. Gelb, available in paperback. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Our film critic John Power says that the best performance he saw in 1999 was given by Om Puri, my guest. He's made over 130 movies, but chances are you've never heard of him because he's worked mostly in Bombay, in the Indian film industry known as Bollywood, where he's made both commercial and art films. Now he's getting better known in the West with the help of a couple of British films. The film John liked him in, My Son the Fanatic, is out now on video. Om Puri plays an Indian who has emigrated to England, where he drives a taxi. He enjoys his new culture and is mortified to find that his son is becoming a Muslim fundamentalist and looks down on his father's assimilation. Here they are at a restaurant.
All right. If this is reality, that I'm disgusting, that I've never been a good man, and I've never done anything worthwhile, I must face it. After all, you have observed me for a long time. But tell me, at least you're keeping up with your studies.
Probably there are suffering men inside prison who require guidance.
What guidance? If they're inside, they must be fools.
Papa, I've never met men more sincere and thirsty for the spirit. An accountancy, it's just capitalism and taking advantage. You can't succeed in it unless you go to a pub and meet women.
Fool, you are beginning to irritate my ass. What's wrong with women?
Many lack belief and therefore reason. Papa, the final message is a complete
one
guidance.
One thing I know.
Please, it's not too late. I beg you to seek Allah's forgiveness for your mistakes.
Please, boy, don't go too far in
this. No, it is you who have swallowed the white and Jewish propaganda that there is nothing to our lives but the empty accountancy for things, for nothing.
I am swallowing nothing but Brother Fizzy's dinner, and it will give me indigestion now.
Parvez.
But a wasp has gone into your gullet.
Parvez, for God's sake, Mary's sitting over there. Eat.
I've lost my appetite. This boy is massacring my life.
Om Puri stars in a new film called East is East. This time he plays a Pakistani emigre named George who lives in England with his British wife. He tries to bring up his kids with the traditions of Pakistan, including arranged marriage. His oldest son refused to go through with the marriage and was disowned by George. But now George is ready to arrange marriages for two of his younger sons. Here he is talking with his wife in bed, telling her that he's invited a family with eligible daughters to visit.
His name is Trishaw. Good family. Been in this country 25 years.
But big house, 3 toilets.
He got 2 daughters, you know. Same age as Abdul and Tariq.
Oh, Christ's sake, George. We're not gonna go through all that again. You've got to talk to the boys.
I'll tell them, and I want Buster telling them.
They have a right to know, George.
What do you mean, right? Pakistani believe if father asks son marry, son follow father instruction.
Oh, I knew you were up to something. Look what happened with Nazir.
Don't mention that bastard's name to me. He dead.
No, he's not. He's living in Eccles. He might be dead to you, but he's still my son.
Why you not listen, you stupid? I tell you, Ella, if you don't want to live my way, then you're packing off now and take your bastard kids out of my house. Where are you going?
I'm going to make some tea.
I have half a cup.
Om Puri, welcome to Fresh Air. In East is East, you play a father who's an Orthodox Muslim and wants to raise his westernized, rebellious children in the Muslim tradition. And in My Son the Fanatic, it's the opposite. You play the westernized father whose son becomes an Orthodox Muslim. Do either of these two roles connect with your own life?
Well, I feel Parvez, which is My Son the Fanatic father, is closer to me. And George Khan, perhaps, is, I see slight resemblance in my father. Though he never really objected to my, you know, choosing my career. For example, I wanted to be in theater. He didn't object. I wanted to join films. He never objected to it. But he did have a temper, and he was, you know, strict at times. Like, he wanted me to get married pretty early, which I didn't. You know, so there is, you know, small kind of shades, but I wouldn't say that my father was absolutely alike, like George Khan.
Did your father want to choose your bride the way the father in East is East wanted to choose the bride for his son?
No, no. He just wanted me to get married and make my choice, but he used to threat that in case you don't choose, then I'm going to go ahead and choose one for you. I mean, he never did that. I mean, I had a love marriage. And
was your father a religious man?
He wasn't terribly religious. He was in the British Army. My mother was religious, but he never forced her religion or her views on me. I mean, she used to visit the temple every morning, but she never really forced me to follow her.
And what was their religion?
Well, I'm born Hindu, and but I never really, you know, I mean, I'm not really Orthodox Hindu. I'm liberal. I respect all religions. And I have no hang-ups. And I'm not an atheist. But at the same time, I'm not religious either.
Right.
I mean, I feel all religions do speak the same language. But unfortunately, the wise men in all religions do interpret religion in, you know, and they distort religion, and that creates a lot of problems all over the world.
You're living part of the time in London, part of the time in Bombay. Your new film is British. Your recent film, My Son the Fanatic, is also British. When did you decide to live part-time in London?
Well, my major work has been in India. I have been in Bombay for the last 24 years, and I've done about 130-odd films. For the last 5-6 years, I have been doing, you know, work outside of India also, which has become pretty regular now. And, you know, at least one film a year I've been doing abroad. And it just happened after City of Joy. City of Joy was the first big Western film which I did, which was shot mainly in India, and then part of it for about 3 weeks was shot in a studio in London. Then Roland Joffé, who directed the film, he told me that you should have an agent. I said, well, I don't know nothing about agents, etc. He said, no, we'll find one for you. And he found me a wonderful agent in London, Jeremy Conway. And that's how things started happening in the West.
You made about 130 films in India. That's a staggering number of films. Tell me what the production schedule is like that would enable you to make so many films.
Well, India is the largest film-producing country in the world. I mean, it's a huge country with 900 million people and about 23 different languages. And the main national language is Hindi. And, I mean, I worked mostly in Hindi films. So for an actor, it is not a big deal to do, you know, 130 films in 24 years. There are actors in India who really overwork too much, and they may be in their mid-60s or something, and they may have done 350 films, you know, which is quite... Now, you know, for example, if you have a major part, if you're playing a central part, then maybe you'll be required for 8 weeks to finish the film. And in some films, you may have a smaller part, which means you may be required for 3 weeks or 4 weeks. So easily, you can do 5-6 films in a year.
What are some of the typical roles you've played in Indian movies?
Well, I have been mostly associated, my early career, for about 10-12 years, I have been with the art cinema, which is a cinema which is socially relevant, which talks about the social issues, social political issues, etc., which is small in nature, which is small in budget also. And whereas the commercial cinema is huge, big canvas, big money. And art cinema gave me respect, credibility, status, and gave me opportunity to travel all over the world, because those films went to all kind of festivals all over the world. Whereas commercial cinema gave me a standard of living back home. So I'm part of my work, which is about 35-40%, is commercial cinema, which essentially is an entertaining cinema and what we call escapist cinema.
From what I've seen of Indian movies, a lot of the commercial movies are musicals with big production numbers, and I'm not sure how much of a plot there even is. Tell us
plots
about...
Plots are very, very repetitive in Indian films.
What are some of the typical stories in the plots?
Well, typical stories, you see, it's like a sheep mentality. You know, suppose there is an action film which becomes a big hit, then everybody will be making action films for a couple of years till they exhaust their genre. And then suddenly someone will make a love story, meets girl kind of a thing, and becomes a big hit. Then everybody starts making love stories till they exhaust themselves. And they are greatly influenced by the American cinema. Any film which is a big hit here, they will try and adopt it and make a Indian film out of it.
Did you do a lot of musicals?
Well, I have been in musicals, but essentially I have been a character actor in those films. I did initially a couple of films with songs and dances, but actually I feel very uncomfortable in those kind of parts. But I have played major characters in big budget films.
So why do you feel uncomfortable in the singing parts? Because there seems to be so many of them.
Because I find it ridiculous. I find it illogical. In fact, the other day, someone here asked me, you know, how come, you know, in your film, suddenly we see your characters in films singing and dancing in Vancouver or in Switzerland or in South Africa. How does that happen in the plot? I said, well, the Indian characters dream. They dream that we are in Switzerland, so they are in Switzerland. Or they dream they are in Vancouver, so you immediately cut, oh, we are in Vancouver.
No, I think one of the directors you worked with in your years working in the art cinema was Satyajit Ray.
That's right.
What was the name of the film that you did with Satyajit Ray?
It was, in Hindi, it was called Sadgati, S-A-D-G-A-T-I, which means deliverance.
Did he give you any new insights into acting or, you know, into acting on camera?
In my mind was that, you know, one had a view that Mr. Ray, since he does so much paperwork and you will be just put into a straight jacket and, you know, you won't have any flexibility to do what you want to do. You know, I thought it was just a misconception of people. He was very, very flexible. Yes, true, he did a lot of homework. He did have a paperwork done. But he would give a lot of freedom to the actors. And he was open to any new thing which would help better the film. I mean, one day, for example, we were supposed to be doing the climax scene, which is a big scene, and which he had various shots worked out for it. And it was lunch. Immediately after lunch, I noticed that he's looking at the sky and with eyes absolutely focused. And he kept staring at the sky for a good 30 seconds. I said, what's happening? And we saw it's cloudy. And suddenly he just went berserk and he ordered that put the maximum trolley you have, just fix that. So we had about 100 feet trolley, and which was put. And he took that entire scene in one shot. And it was very dramatic because it started raining, and that's what he expected. And he wanted to use the rain. But at the same time, he changed his shots. Instead of taking different shots, he took one shot because obviously he thought that if the rain stops in between and he hasn't finished the scene, then where will he get the artificial rain? So that was very clever and very, very sort of thoughtful of that. Exactly what his fears were, it was right. I mean, the moment we finished that scene, we took about 3 takes and the rain stopped. And then, certain close-ups of mine were done because since it was just a close-up, with a bucket and somebody held a branch of a tree over my head and threw little water on top. And that's how the close-ups were done.
My guest is actor Om Puri. He's made about 130 films in India. He stars in the British films My Son the Fanatic, which is now out on video, and the new movie East is East. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. I hope that Fresh Air has helped you discover movies, books, and music that you've enjoyed, and that you've enjoyed spending time with the people behind the movies, books, and music that you already love. I also hope that you'll call and support the program with a pledge. Your station has to pay a fee for most of the national programs that it carries, including Fresh Air. In order for your station to afford to carry the program in the future, we need Fresh Air listeners to pledge during the show now. Thank you for your support. If you're just joining us, my guest is Om Puri, an actor who splits his time between Bombay, India, and London. He stars in the new movie East is East. What movies did you see when you were young that made a big impression on you?
Well, when I was growing up, I grew up in a small town, and the only cinema I was exposed to was the Hindi cinema. Mm-hmm. But also, fortunately, that time I was also exposed to the cinemas of the 60s and 70s, which was a wonderful Indian cinema, which also had songs and dances, you know, like in the West, for example, you had Fiddler on the Roof and you had Sound of Music, which were actually social films. But the story is told through singing and dancing. And similarly, our cinema in 60s and 70s was very, very relevant, you know, socially relevant and also entertaining because it had songs and dances. A very little Western cinema I saw, I remember till I was in college, I saw maybe 3 or 4 English films. I mean, the first film I remember seeing was Lord Jim with Peter O'Toole. And 2 comedies, Stitch in Time Saves 9, and the other one, that was Norman Wisdom, I think. And Saps at Sea with Laurel Hardy. But later, when I went and joined drama school, then I was exposed to, the Western cinema.
Your father was an officer in the British Army during the era when India was ruled by England. What attitude were you brought up with regarding British rule?
Well, I was born in 50, and we got the independence in 47. So the British had left. I waited for them to come into the world. No, my father did. He was greatly influenced by the Britishers. I mean, he used to refer to their discipline constantly. In fact, he used to, you know, sometime make a comment on that, you know, I wish the Britishers had not gone because we don't know how to look after ourselves, etc. So he had a hangover of British Empire in him. I mean, particularly he used to refer to, you know, because we Indians tend to not, you know, have a great deal of respect for time. You know, if somebody says, oh, well, you're supposed to be there at 9, I mean, it could be 9:40, it could be 9:50. So that used to bug him and irritate him. And plus, you know, the English, for example, is a language of, like any other language in India. I mean, like we have 23 regional languages, and English is also one of them. So it is not that for Indians, English is not a foreign language. It is part of the Indian ethos now. I mean, any child who goes to school automatically learns English. All the government work, central government work, is done in English. All the business in India is done in English.
What was it like to have a part in the movie Gandhi about driving out the British after your father had worked in the British Army?
Well, Gandhi, I had a small cameo, but it was an important moment in the film when Gandhi is sitting on a fast in Calcutta and he wants to, stop the riots between Hindus and Muslims. And I was representing the angry Hindus and, a group of Hindus laying arms in front of him and pledging that we will stop the riots, to which I sort of barge in and throw a piece of bread on his face and say, okay, don't die, old man, but here, listen, I have a story. My child was killed by Muslims who was 5-year-old, and now you want us to stop killing Muslims? And then Gandhi gives his own view that, okay, now you pick up a Muslim child and bring him up as your own. And that breaks him, and, you know, he breaks down and he falls at his feet and he gives in. So it's a nice moment in the film Gandhi, which I enjoyed. It was only, as I said, it was a small part. I was not with the unit for a long time. But nicely, I was, you know, pleasantly surprised when that year the Oscars were going on, and a couple of my friends in India called me up. He said, hey, put on your television. They are showing your scene in the Oscars. So I was quite tickled. And but by the time I switched on, it had gone because it was such a small clipping.
Om Puri. He'll be back in the second half of the show. He stars in the new movie East is East. His movie My Son the Fanatic is now out on video. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Coming up, the difference between making movies in the East and the West. We continue our conversation with actor Om Puri. He's starring in the new British film, East is East. Hey, la, 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 la.
Thank you.
Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. From Reel.com, an online source for movies, offering over 100,000 titles on VHS and DVD. On the web at reel.com. AOL keyword REEL. And from Random House's Bantam Books Division, publisher of The Soup Has Many Eyes, From Shtetl to Chicago, One Family's Journey Through History by Joanne Rose Leonard. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Om Puri, one of the stars of the Indian cinema. India produces more movies than any other country. Om Puri has been in about 130 films. He now divides his time between Bombay and London. He stars in two British films, My Son the Fanatic, which is now out on video, and the new movie East is East. Are actors in India, successful actors, treated as stars in the way that we have stars in America? You know, like this, the celebrity class is a class unto itself in America. They have a lot of money. They live in separate places. They tend to socialize with each other and to be treated almost like, gods and goddesses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It is same there. But to be honest, I don't fall into that category, and neither I would want to. I am very well known all over India, but the only difference is they wouldn't want to tear my clothes if they see me. Yes, they would want to talk to me. They would want to have a chat with me. They would want to know what I'm doing here. They'll be very interested. Perhaps, you know, the kind of image which I have created for myself through my films, because the films are not fantasies. You know, they've been real films. So my image as a social being is very different than the commercial stars. And I don't avoid people, you know, whether it's at the airport, whether it's in a social place or in a market. Suppose you bump into, you know, people. And if we are filming outdoors, we do attract a lot of crowd, and if people want to have a word, you know, one goes up to them and says hello. But I do attract a lot of crowds, and I do get fan mail, and all those things are there. But as you earlier asked me, do we have stars who live separately, who have flashy cars? You know, well, we do, we do.
What are some of your impressions of the differences for an actor making a Western movie compared to an Indian film?
The major difference in India, particularly in commercial cinema, is the fact that the films are not shot at a stretch. They are shot in bits and pieces. You shoot for a film for 10 days, and then you don't shoot for that film for 3 months. Then you shoot for 20 days. Then you don't shoot for that for maybe 6 months. So it's shot in bits and pieces, which is a very erratic way of working, really.
That sounds really odd. I said that sounds really odd because, first of all, your body can change in 6 months. And second of all...
Yes, and it does. Uh-huh. It does, you know. But people try and, you know, say, for example, they will keep the same haircut for every role they play, you know, the commercial actors. And they would try and keep their same weight. But a lot of times, if the film gets delayed, which it does actually, you know, normal Hindi commercial film takes 1.5 years to, it can go up to 3 years. So in 3 years, people do change. People put on weight, people, you know. So that's a major difference, really. And whereas in the West, I presume, you know, particularly the films which I have done, 10, 12 films abroad, that the films are shot at a stretch. And another peculiar thing, which is quite funny, is that commercial cinema does not give you a copy of a script. Unlike the art cinema in India, they tell you a story and they tell you your character, but you don't have a copy of script in your hand.
So how do you learn your lines?
You get it on the same day when you go for filming. You get it on the same morning, so no homework is expected from an actor.
What's the rationale behind that?
Well, rationale is that they are not ready with their scripts. In fact, when they ask me in India, you know, what is the difference between shooting in the West and East and here, I say, well, they work on a script for 2 years, and then go ahead and shoot the film within 6 months, and that's it. And you work here for 2 months on a script and then go on shooting for 3 years. But Terry, let me tell you, the thing is, they feel very insecure, the producers. That is why they don't give you a copy of the script, because they all get worried that somebody else will steal their subject. Because we don't have a serious copyright, etc. So therefore, they don't reveal their scripts. They would have a copy of the script, but it will be with them. And they never reveal the climax of the film till the end. When they are almost done with the entire film, then they go and shoot the climax, because they feel that some other producer or director will steal their idea, and they won't have the novelty.
So how do you evaluate if you want to do a movie or not if you haven't even had a chance to read the script?
Well, you know the story, and you know the character, and you take it from there. I mean, when the scene comes in front of you, and the senior actors would sit on it, maybe disagree and, you know, change, talk about it, and then take their time to prepare the part. But it is not a professional way of working, and that is why that cinema does not really interest me so much, though I have to work in it, because, you know, for the living, because that cinema has given me all the goodies in life. The facilities I enjoy did come from commercial cinema, so I am grateful to that cinema also. I try to be as disciplined as professional as I am for art films. I treat commercial cinema also the same way, like going on the set on time. But our stars are quite notorious. I mean, they don't show up on time. This is, something which is very, very annoying. They are pretty indulgent. Unlike the West, even huge stars, I have whatever films I have, whether it was Patrick Swayze or Val Kilmer or, Michael Douglas, all of them, I mean, they are absolutely punctual. They are ready with their lines, and they are, truly professional. And I hope this sense of professionalism comes into the Indian commercial atmosphere also.
Now, you had said that you didn't have an agent until after City of Joy. City of Joy, yeah. So how did you get by in Indian cinema making all those movies without an agent? Do people just call you personally? You know, in America, like, everybody has an agent if they're making movies.
No, in India, I do have what we call, we don't call it agent, we call it a secretary. So I do have a secretary in India, but he doesn't look for work for me. The work comes and he handles it, mm-hmm. In terms of organizing dates or talking to the producers about money and then, recovering the money, looking after my income tax, etc. All this job is done by him. But he, in fact, when I did take on a secretary, I told him also, I said, please, you don't look for work. The work will come and we are supposed to handle it. Because suppose you bring in work, and which I don't like, you make an effort, and then it will be, it won't be nice that I say no to it. And, I'll also feel embarrassed by saying no, because I want to make choices.
My guest is actor Om Puri. He's made about 130 films in India. He stars in the British films My Son the Fanatic, which is now out on video, and the new movie East is East. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air.
Thank you.
If you're just joining us, my guest is actor Om Puri, and he divides his time between Bombay and London. He stars in the new film East is East. He also stars in the film My Son the Fanatic, written by Hanif Qureshi, and that film has just come out on video. Om Puri, how did you end up acting? How old were you when you decided you wanted to act?
Well, in school, I was fascinated by army. I wanted to be a soldier. But when I reached college, I drifted. I mean, I started participating in college activities, and one of them was also working in the plays. And I was picked up by a couple from a youth festival, college youth festival, where they were one of the judges. And they had their own semi-professional theater group. And they invited me to join that. And I joined their theater group, and while I was doing my college, I did a number of plays with them. They did a lot of Western plays also, like Strindberg and Bernard Shaw, Ibsen, and also Indian social plays. And then that's where I really got hooked on to. And through them, I came to know about National School of Drama, which I joined later. So that's how I really drifted. And I mean, I was very shy and very reserved as a child, very, very introvert. And I think somewhere I feel that by acting in those social plays, somewhere I found a great satisfaction that something which I feel strongly about your society, about your views on the society, what you see on the streets, etc., and those plays were giving voice to my emotions. I could identify with those thoughts and ideas, and I thought it's wonderful that I'm sharing those feelings with the audience.
Did acting make you less shy?
Eventually it did, over a period of time. I could be exuberant in, strangely, in a scene. But the moment scene is over and I'm back to normal life, I would again go into my shell. It went on. In fact, I remember in drama school, I was supposed to do a very tender romantic scene. I think we were doing, yes, it was Caucasian Chalk Circle, and I was playing Simon. And I was supposed to hold hand of this girl, and I was about 20 that time. And I was very sort of, I was shivering. And then the director noticed and he took me aside. He said, Om, explain me, feel comfortable. You must, it's emotions, and these are noble emotions, et cetera, et cetera. So gradually I think I did, become comfortable.
Now, you've been making more movies in England. I imagine one of the obstacles you're up against is trying to find good roles for an Indian actor.
Yes.
My guess would be there aren't a lot of them.
Yes, I wouldn't say there are a lot of them. And that's why I'm not leaving my ground.
Right.
That's Bombay.
Right.
So whenever I have an opportunity, because I've been enjoying to work in the West, and I hope I do find, roles like in the past, people who had faces like me, like Mr. Anthony Quinn, who has been my favorite, and also Omar Sharif, who could look like an Arab. And I hope that I do have interesting parts, not necessarily major roles, but interesting characters. I'll be happy enough to work in those.
You said that people like Anthony Quinn and Omar Sharif have faces like you. What kind of face do you have?
I think, I essentially have an Asian face and a gypsy face. And I could be from Arab. I could be from South America, parts of South America. So it's not necessarily a Indian face. It's a rustic face. It's not traditional good-looking chocolate face.
What does chocolate face mean?
Chocolate face means well-chiseled, beautiful, you know, everything proportional. I have a big nose, big fat nose. And I have pork marks, which I got it when I was about 5, I think. I had smallpox.
You had smallpox?
Yes, I had smallpox when I was about 5.
And that scarred your face?
Yes.
Wow, do you have a lot of memories of when you had smallpox?
I think I have been even smaller than that. The only image I do remember that my mother used to tie me to the cot, when she had to do some work. She used to tie me so that I don't scratch. She used to tie my hands to the cot.
Did you?
That image I do remember.
Was it questionable whether you'd survive or not?
Yes, it could have been, because we were actually a big family. We were 8 brothers, sisters, and today we are just 2 of us. I'm the youngest in the family, and my mother lost all 6 of them. My eldest brother, she lost him when he was 15, one brother at the age of 9, one sister at the age of 5. One sister I remember seeing when I was in college, she was married, and she also died in her, I think she was about 40.
What did they die of?
Well, various diseases. You see, that time, we are talking about, say, 45 years ago. And that time in small towns, etc., the health conditions were pretty bad. My mother said, you know, your eldest brother just came back from school and she saw his face was red and she thought it just... his body was warm. She thought just a little temperature or something. But he may have had a high fever. And he just collapsed next day. Now, of course, the survival rate, of course, is much, much higher. But in those days, the survival rate was pretty low. And that was one of the reasons why people had a lot of children in the past. Because they didn't know how many of them will survive.
When you were growing up with the pock marks left from smallpox, were you very self-conscious about that as a kid?
I was, to be honest. You know, when I used to look at films, etc. And that is why, perhaps one of the reasons why I didn't go directly to cinema. I went into theater. And I thought, I don't have a right kind of a face for the theater. Till I was exposed to world cinema, you know, when I saw, the international cinema or cinema of Satyajit Ray and Mrinal Sen, then I saw that, you know, oh, well, there are faces like me in these films. And since I was only exposed to the commercial Indian cinema, you know, which had most faces were chiseled, what we call chocolate faces.
Mm-hmm. Were you worried about the close-ups,
then,
too?
Yes. Then my taboo really sort of broke, and I started thinking in terms of... I was no longer self-conscious, and today I'm not. In fact, when I came to Bombay, some of my senior friends did suggest me that I should go in for plastic surgery. I said, no, I will not fool around with my body. But I will play, I will accept whatever his nature has given me.
I'm glad you said that.
Yeah.
I just think it's really good when people can have their real faces and don't have to get them surgically altered, because there's so much of that now. And it's also one of the things that makes you so interesting to watch, because you have such a real face, an expressive one at that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I couldn't imagine myself going through plastic surgery looking at myself that, you know, where is the person gone with whom I had lived for 30 years or 35 years? Yeah?
Well, Om Puri, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry. It's been great talking to you, and it's a great pleasure.
Om Puri stars in the new movie East is East. His recent film, My Son the Fanatic, is now out on video. This is Fresh Air. I suspect that you listen to public radio for some of the same reasons I've spent my adult life working in it. For me, it boils down to this. Many of the actors, authors, and composers I most enjoy interviewing wouldn't be considered popular enough for other broadcast outlets. And I value the luxury of time that Fresh Air gives me, time to allow my guests to think out loud and not just answer in sound bites. I figure you expect public radio to bring you the people you're interested in hearing from or learning about, and that you want more than sound bites. So let's keep it going. Your pledge now will go a long way in doing just that. Thank you. Sunday night at 9, CBS presents a drama called Failsafe, not the 1964 movie starring Henry Fonda, but a new TV version with George Clooney, who's also the executive producer. It's a version that will be performed live and broadcast in black and white. Although TV critic David Bianculli can't review the show in advance, he does have some advance observations.
There are two stories to talk about here. The story about Failsafe, the drama, and the story about Failsafe in the larger picture of TV in the year 2000. First things first. The original Failsafe movie, based on the 1962 novel, was presented at the height of the Cold War, when fears of both the Soviet Union and nuclear weaponry ran deep. The plot involves a technical failure somewhere within America's war machine, leading to an unprovoked bomber attack against the Russians. The president contacts the Soviet premier in hopes of averting an all-out nuclear war, with both sides of the Iron Curtain on red alert. Stanley Kubrick's Dr. Strangelove played with the same basic story that same year, but for laughs. Failsafe was dead serious. In the 1964 film, director Sidney Lumet presented events as realistically as possible. There was no music score whatsoever, and the feel was more of a documentary than a movie. Here's an example, with the president briefing his Russian translator on the conversation they're about to have with the Soviet leader. The president is played by Henry Fonda, the translator by a young Larry Hagman.
Buck, I'm going to talk to the Soviet premier now. You'll translate what he says to me. He'll have his own translator telling what I say, but I want something more from you.
Yes, sir, whatever I can do.
I think the premier will be saying what he means. He usually does, but sometimes there's more in a man's voice than in his words. And there are words in one language that don't carry the same weight in another. You follow me?
Well, I think so, sir.
It's very important the premier and I understand each other. I don't have to tell you how important. So I want to know not only what he's saying, but what you think he's feeling. Any inflection of his voice, any tone, any emotion that adds to his words, I want you to let me know.
Yes, sir, I'll do my best.
I know you will, Buck. It's all any of us can do. And don't be afraid. Say what you think. Don't be afraid all this is too big for you, Buck. It's big, all right, but it still depends on what each of us does. History lesson number one. I'll talk to Moscow now.
Sunday's TV version is written by Walter Bernstein, the same man who adapted the novel for the original movie. It's directed by filmmaker Stephen Frears, and the cast, assembled by Clooney, is first rate. Richard Dreyfuss plays the president, Noah Wiley of ER plays the translator, and Clooney plays the colonel in the cockpit of the bomber. Other performers include Brian Dennehy, Harvey Keitel, Don Cheadle, and Sam Elliott. And all of them will be performing live, like in the golden age of television. And that's the larger story here. With primetime TV audiences dwindling each year, it seems the networks are deciding more and more to fight back by using tricks from 50 years ago. Back then, TV was trying to lure audiences from radio. Today, they're trying to keep them from defecting to cable and the internet. Some of the weapons they're using, though, are precisely the same. Credit this new wave of old-wave TV to Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, the ABC summer series that is nothing short of a phenomenon. No matter where the network plays it or how often, Millionaire is a major hit. It's the first quiz show in primetime since the scandals of the late 50s, and it's done something that TV had all but forgotten how to do. It gets several generations of viewers into the same room, watching the same show. Quiz and game shows aren't the only golden age TV tricks being applied again these days. Thanks or no thanks to UPN and WWF SmackDown, pro wrestling is back in primetime. Fox is talking about presenting 15-minute shows, a concept last seen a half century ago. And Failsafe is only the first of several planned live TV experiments. Is this a step forward or a step backward? Wrestling, no question, is a giant leap back for mankind. Quiz shows, good ones, and Millionaire is a good one, were and are fun to watch. And live TV, I love it. Some people are saying the only reason to watch Failsafe is to see if someone makes a mistake. I'm after more than that. I'm after excitement and excellence.
David Bianculli is TV critic for the New York Daily News. You can catch the original Failsafe movie Sunday night at 11:30 on Turner Classic Movie Channel. Earlier today, I recorded an interview with Sidney Poitier, who's written a new memoir. We'll play the interview sometime soon. We'll close today's show with the theme from his movie To Sir With Love, as recorded by Al Green. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our engineer is Audrey Bentham. Dorothy Ferriby is our administrative assistant. Roberta Shurrock directs the show. I'm Terry Gross. This is NPR, National Public Radio. On the next archive edition of Fresh Air, in celebration of Poetry Month, we feature interviews with some of our favorite poets. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.